don't spend time sitting watching Netflix. If you want to be an expert at something, learn about it and spend time learning about that.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, longtime executive coach and professional recruiter and best-selling author. Let's get into it.
Greetings and welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace. I'm Carol Schultz. Today, we're going to get into what it means to be a woman in a male-dominated industry and the challenges or perks that come with it. If you want to learn more about gender dynamics in the workplace, this one's for you. And here to share her firsthand experience as a woman is Sandy Luck, multi-time founder and CEO of Bully Brew Coffee, North Dakota Coffee Roasters, and Boardroom Coffee and Tap House. Sandy, we've been trying to get this recorded for a while now. I'm so glad to have you with me. And if you could start by telling our audience a little bit about you and about these three companies.
Absolutely. Thank you, Carol, for inviting me. It's a pleasure. I'm excited to share with you and visit today. So let's talk about these companies. It starts with Bully Brew Coffee. That was founded in 2010. And quite honestly, it's named after my bulldog, Elvis. So it's Bully is for the bulldog.
Right.
And when that started, it was a side hustle. My profession is a college professor. So I worked at the University of North Dakota for about 15 years as a marketing professor. I started in entrepreneurship. That's where I first started. And I was teaching students. I love to teach. Mm-hmm. That's probably one of my favorite jobs that I've ever had where I was employed by someone else. So I started Bully Brew because there was a nursing home that needed a cafe or almost like a snack bar. Mm-hmm. And when he had called and asked me that, I said, Cheryl, I can do this. Because prior to that, I had coffee kiosks, which again was a side hustle. And I really wasn't thinking that it was going to continue. Just thought I would do it for a couple of years and it would be good. Well, then I had some opportunity that came forward and I just continued to open up more Bully Brew coffees. In the meantime, I had the opportunity to buy one of them that was in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and it had a coffee roaster. And I went there, watched her roast, and I said, as soon as you're ready to sell this location, I would love to buy it because I want to roast not only for my own companies, but I want to sell to others. And she said, oh, that's going to be crazy. You shouldn't do that because that'll be overwhelming. And I just said, okay, well, whenever you're ready to sell. Probably about a year later, she was ready to sell, sold it to me. And that's where the coffee roastery came into play. So then I started roasting not only for Bully Brews, but also for several others in the Midwest and named it North Dakota Coffee Roastery. Boardroom Coffee and Tap House came quite a few years later, and it came from a partnership. So during COVID, the roastery actually had moved like locations, buildings, physical movement from one to another as we continued to grow. It went into a location that was a coffee shop. And during COVID, you know, we weren't letting anybody inside. It had a drive through. So I closed down the inside, put the roaster inside, the big, large roaster, and then just had the drive through for espresso drinks, but also for bags of coffee, because we were very well known at that time for picking up your 16-ounce bags of coffee. And so I did that. And after COVID, which crazy, we grew, the roastery itself grew and ended up having to be into another location that was a larger square footage. So I moved that. And a friend of mine who owns a brewery said, hey, let's open up a coffee and, you know, beer location. I said, yeah, I would love to do that. One of my dreams. So Chad and I had done that. We did it for about a year. We partnered and it was called the Other Half Coffee Tap House.
And I love it.
Yep. Great friend of mine. Yeah. Love Chad and his wife. They're great people, but we work very differently. And the partnership just, it was not bad. It was just wrong. Because we just work differently. And we decided to dissolve our partnership. And part of it was then, you know, I would change the name. So then came Boardroom Coffee and Tap House. Boardroom Coffee and Tap House is all pink and black and beautiful. It's all about women. Boards, meaning charcuterie boards. Mm-hmm. So we do all different kinds of boards. Mm. and we do flights, beer, wine, and coffee from Bully Brew Coffee. So that's those three companies.
Got it. So I want to digress just a little bit back to, because you brought up that, you know, a year after you and Chad started this business, things went south because you worked in different ways.
Right.
This is one of the biggest problems for founders is, one, finding a co-founder, right? We would consider him the co-founder of this company, right? The two of you. And I can't tell you how many young people have said to me, oh, I don't want to get a co-founder because of all the problems that you can have. But let's talk about what you didn't do, what you missed in deciding to get a co-founder and go into business with somebody and then realizing a year later, oh shit, this is not going to work.
Yeah. So, well, let's first talk about the positive. I love the positives of all this. Chad and I and his wife, Catherine, all of us good friends.
Yeah.
We actually create a beer together. So it's called Bully Brew Brown Ale from his brewery. And that started years ago, canned the beer. It's popular here in the North Dakota area, Minnesota area. And it was great. We had a great time creating, developing from which beans that would go into the beer. I think for that, I saw Chad's work ethic. He's crazy, has a crazy work ethic with, you know, brewing beer. It's time consuming. And it's something that if you've never watched anybody do that, it's an experience. And I would say from there, we both understood work ethic. So a positive with that. One of the negatives is our brains are different, man and woman, first of all, right? But also in numbers. I have been doing businesses since I was probably, you know, 20 years old when I first started my first business. And I have a business degree. I understand numbers. I believe the reason why I'm a success with my companies that have been successful is because of the numbers. So that was one of the things that maybe he didn't, I think he did with his own company, but we didn't connect on those numbers for our coffee house and tap house together. So that was probably one of our biggest mistakes that we didn't work harder. I didn't work harder on that. So I'll say that. I think the other positive is sometimes when you go into business, you have these expertise, but you don't have it all. And to hear his voice at a different angle or, you know, expertise at a different topic area was so great because it's hard to trust other people all the time.
I agree. 100%.
Yeah. I can listen to other mentors, but sometimes when you really hear somebody else give you criticism, it's deep. And somebody that is trusting you with their money.
And, you know, like I said, this is not here to trash your friend. This is to look at, you know, what are the mistakes, you know, we made doing this? What would we do differently? Because this is very, very common among founders.
Yeah.
They thought, you know, and then they realize set down the road. So, I mean, often it turns out to be a massively horrible divorce, right? Yes. This obviously didn't happen for you, fortunately. No.
I do think if we would have waited longer, it would have been a massively ugly divorce.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the things that's probably good. We made that decision quickly.
Yeah.
The other thing that we didn't do that you're told by every attorney and every business consultant and coach, write a partnership agreement.
Yeah, right.
We're friends. We're fine.
Sandy, how many employees do you have across your three different companies?
Well, baristas, you know, and it's college time, so they kind of come and go. But I would say anywhere between 65 to 75.
And how many people on your executive team?
There are five of us.
Okay, awesome.
And then each store has its own manager. So I do consider them as leaders.
Well, yeah, right. But they don't report to you. They report to one of your other members of the executive team, I assume?
Yeah.
Okay, got it. You can't be everywhere, nor should you. So how have you gone about, you know, since you opened acquiring customers, right? Like what channels or methods have been the most successful for you?
So it depends on what you're talking about with acquiring customers, because I do have several different customers. So customers being coffee shop customers, coffee, you know, coffee shop owners is some of my customers, because that's of course who we sit. Wholesale
the roasters, right?
The roastery. And through the roastery, I do what's called the North Dakota Coffee School. So that is a coffee school that teaches someone who's an aspiring coffee shop owner that wants to own their own coffee house. So mm-hmm. they come to the roaster here. We have a classroom. We have a barista lab or a coffee lab that's exactly how a coffee house would be set up. Everything from the plumbing, where the electrical is, all that good stuff.
Love it.
And so we do that for 3 days. That is another customer of mm-hmm. mine. And then, of course, you know, wholesale, we wholesale to restaurants, hotels, mm-hmm. car dealerships. So it depends on us that. So tell me which customer you want me to talk about.
Well, I'd like to hear about all of them. But, you know, so the restaurants, right? There's probably plenty of restaurants in town. How did you go about letting people know, you know, here we are, you know, why should you try our beans?
So Grand Forks is not big. Fargo is north of us. Mm-hmm. And then we're in small towns in the North Dakota, Minnesota area. A lot of times it's connections, it's relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm a believer in connecting with people and getting to know people mm-hmm. and then going into having a conversation about the product. Mm-hmm. I'm also okay if people don't use our product. You know, I think that's something that is, I don't know. I don't know that it feels good all the time that somebody chooses to go to another, you know, coffee house or to purchase from someone else. But at the same time, I can't control that. So I've tried to take that away from myself. The restaurant owner that I'm thinking of in particular, we really just went to them and went to the chef and had a conversation with the chef and saying, yeah. here's what we can offer. They use our espresso beans in their espresso mm-hmm. martinis. They're delicious. And in some of their drinks. But what was real fun is learning how many times, you know, that coffee is actually used for their employees. Nah. And it's awesome. I love that because think about that. You're an employee of a very busy fine dining restaurant mm-hmm. and you're allowed to have espresso shots. And again, it just goes back to maybe that internal HR part where you are taking care of your people. So
yeah. Yeah. Very good. Tell me about the people who come and take your 3 day class. What's the mix of men to women?
Or
women 90, to men.
95% women.
Why is that?
And that's interesting because we're in the Midwest, I think. Because if you go to the East Coast yeah. or the West Coast, you see male baristas, you see male roasters. Even when I go to any conferences that have to do with coffee, it is male dominated. And I have the barista book. It's one of our magazines and it talks about women being in a male industry and how difficult it is sometimes. And I think if you mm-hmm. look around here, people would laugh at me saying that because it's women dominated in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. So the men who come are the husbands.
Interesting.
Not really coming on their own.
Mm-hmm. So when you go to these, you know, when you go to the coast or to conferences or whatever you're doing and it's highly male dominated, are you treated any differently? Are you an anomaly? What's that experience for you?
Well, I can say as myself, as the owner and a roaster, mm-hmm. I'm not normal, right? Because it is mainly men. In the roastery, you could say it's men because you're lifting, you know, 100-pound beans. You know, it is kind of a dirty, ugly job. I mean, when we're cleaning the roaster, let me tell you know, we're all wearing our gross pants and our gross clothes because you're digging in and, mm-hmm. you know, cleaning, you're using your tools. And even as a business owner, I feel like majority of the coffee shops or even the multi-unit coffee shops are owned by men. So am I treated different? Hmm. You know, I'm at an age where I don't worry and think about that. If I was maybe 30 years younger, I would have been a little bit more intimidated. I, at this point, can sit at a table with absolutely anyone and feel comfortable. I'm also comfortable in my own skin. Yeah. So I do think that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. So I don't, you know, I have went through a lifetime maybe two lifetimes of different experiences, whether it's, you know, good or bad experiences with relationships or with businesses, and had to learn how to be confident with myself. It wasn't just born that way. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we forget that. And as women, you have to take care of it yourself. You know, you can probably listen to as many podcasts as you want and read self-help books and do all of that to gain confidence. But a lot of it is your self-talk and taking care of yourself and making sure that you feel good and your expertise.
Mm-hmm. Learn. Absolutely.
Like, don't spend time sitting watching Netflix. If you want to be an expert at something, learn about it and spend time learning about that.
And I just had that conversation with somebody yesterday at the dog park at the end of the day. Do you find yourself, not just with your own business, but with some of these women who are coming in for your 3-day course that may be younger, mentoring and really, you know, guiding because of this?
I do. And I love that part. Mm-hmm. I see myself, you know, my out game is probably staying in the world of teaching. And I think that makes sense for me. I'm comfortable in that world. I'm comfortable, if I don't know it, to go either find out the answer or maybe even, you know, learn with the person that's asking me questions. But I do mentor many of them. We stay in close contact with them. My sales girl, Becky, becomes, you know, we kind of giggle because Becky becomes part of their world. It's like she's an owner with them, but doesn't pay bills. Because really, that's the connection you have as a customer salesperson or owner relationship. And they feel comfortable calling us and asking us questions. We also have the expertise because we run the coffee houses. Right. So we're teaching them how to run a coffee house because we've done it. I've had many of the failures. I've had to shut down shops. We've had difficulties. So I can teach them, these are the red flags. These are the issues. Watch for this. Or they feel comfortable calling me and saying, this is what's happening. You know, how would you handle this? And I'm an open book. I like doing that and helping people. I want to see them succeed. I would love to see more independent coffee shops than corporate coffee shops.
I completely agree. That's all I patronize when I go out is independent coffee shops. Too. Yeah.
Yeah. I have people who will apologize for not coming to Bully Brew and maybe they go to another local. And I'm always like, if you go to a local coffee shop, you have nothing to apologize for. Like just support those locals because those locals are the ones that pay the taxes, pay the bills here in our community. Right. And I think that that's important. So, and keeping local strong.
Yeah, I completely agree. How many Bully Brew locations do you have currently?
So there's 7 Bully Brew coffee houses and there's 2 Boardroom coffee and tap houses.
Okay. So what would you say are your top priorities for growth over the next 6 to 12 to 24 months?
So my plan, I don't want to franchise. So I will say that. That is one thing I don't want to do. But
why not? Let me ask you that real quick.
Well, I've learned from others, mentors, that sometimes there's a lot more logistics that could become scary with franchising. But I will tell you, I've done my research on understanding whether it's called co-ops or licensing. So you're really doing something similar, but there's not as much control. To some people, that might scare them because they might say, well, I really want the control of what's happening. And that's more of a franchise.
That's the cookie cutter model.
Yeah. And none of my stores even now are cookie cutter. You will walk in, you'll get the same drink, the same espresso. You'll have, you know, the same menu, but the environment completely different. My Fargo location, it is business when it, men and women. In my university location, it's obviously university
students. Yeah, so
very different. But I do think that I wouldn't mind licensing more, which means really going back to my teaching model, where I would help someone open up a Bully Brew coffee, they could license through me and utilize my knowledge for whether it's handbook or how to hire people or, you know, how to do all of those things, and then use the branding. And I would, you know, they would pay for the branding, the images, but also some of the content that we do for specialty drinks and things like that.
All right. So back to that growth over the next, you know, 6, 12, 24 months, what your plans are.
I would love to add, I'm going to say I'm going to go with five. My goal in 5 years, this is crazy, this is big, this is dreaming big, is 50 licensed Bully Brew coffees. That might be way over the top, but you have to remember that I have Bully Brew coffees in small towns. Hallock, Minnesota, 1,600 people. It's great, amazing coffee shop. And so I'm a believer in these little small towns. There are opportunity there. There is a few logistics that has to come with that. There has to be a dedicated person running that shop. There has to be dedication from the community to say that they're going to support that. I giggle because in Hallock, every time I go there, the community is loving and warm and amazing. But if there is a slow day, I tell everybody it's almost like a prayer chain. They call everybody and say, hey, Bully Brew is kind of quiet today. Suddenly you walk in and there's loads of people sitting in the booths. They take care of it. You know, I just pay the bills. They all own it. So it's a beautiful thing in a small town.
Sandy, how do you get those employees to own it?
I think I lead people with inspiration. I try to empower them. I think teaching them how to be an owner, even though they're a manager. And that's a big piece of it. And you know, hopefully later on when they're ready, if a manager is in a mode of, I do want to own, they could be the owner of a licensed Bully Brew coffee, which is very possible. And I have grown many managers to own their own coffee shops. I think I have five of them that are not in Grand Forks area or North Dakota, but have moved out of state and they own coffee shops. So yeah, I think that that's there. I have a lot of passion for this industry. I love coffee. I love to learn about it. I love, you know, from the green bean all the way to what the cup is all about, understanding those farmers in the other countries, but also understanding the clients and what they need. We're not we don't do pour overs and French presses in our coffee shops. We could, but we're more about the customer coming in. We want you to feel welcome and warm and want you to feel good. We want it to be a place where you come in and sit with somebody else, put your phone down and have a conversation and drink a cup of coffee and, you know, just be comfortable. I tell all my baristas, we do a 5 second rule. So when somebody walks in, you should be greeted within 5 seconds, whether it's, hey, hi, how are you? Or I also push, use your manners, you know, please and thank you and smile. One of our main pieces of our mission is to, you're going to be greeted with a smile. And we push that. We teach that.
You know, it's not very hard to do. And the rewards that come with that are really exponential.
Absolutely. For yourself and for others, contagious. It's contagious. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Are you able to share sort of your revenue targets and kind of the key drivers to achieving those numbers?
Throughout all of the companies, this year we'll hit probably about 3.5 million. Our most coffee shops that are independent coffee shops run probably 350 a year to 600. That's pretty common, 600,000 in a year.
Wow, that's all.
Yeah, it's not huge.
Okay.
And the profit margin depends. I have a few that are, the profit margin can be anywhere from, I don't know, I'm going to say 13%. There's some that are, you know, 3-4%. So again, it depends. It's, you know, we pay a lot of money for, and coffee beans, the C market has been crazy. We've doubled in price with our green bean market. But, you know, the cup that someone purchases, people will say, well, I'm buying a cup of, you know, a latte for $6, $7, $8. You got to be making a ton of money. But remembering that not only has product gone up in price, think about how much we have to pay those baristas. I mean, that's something that people forget. You know, even at McDonald's, we all kind of, including myself, or any fast food restaurant, you forget that they're paying their people $18, $19 an hour. That's crazy. Try and taking that amount. I mean, I've taught all of my managers. I even teach baristas to do this. You walk into any restaurant or any location and you count how many people and you take it times the amount that you think that they're paying per hour. And then you try to figure out, okay, my meal is $50. How many meals do they have to serve in that hour to pay for those?
Well, meals? And what's the net cost of that meal?
Right.
Exactly. So, you know, the $50 you're paying is not $50 in profits.
No. And it's not going just to that. You know, you're hoping that it's 30% or lower.
Right.
You know, our percentage goals are about 27 to 28% mm-hmm. for payroll.
Right.
And we're pretty particular on that with our managers so that they have to lead that with their scheduling, which means you don't have six people behind the bar.
You can't afford to do that.
No.
Right. What would you say, if anything, is your biggest bottleneck to growth right now?
So, meaning the biggest struggle to growth?
Yeah. Like, so, you know, you've said, well, you know, yeah, and, you know, thinking big, I'd like to have, you know, 50 locations, right? So what would you say might be to get there, right? I mean, you generally work backwards, right? So here's where I want to be. So what's the step before that, so on and so forth. So what would you say is the biggest thing that might be in the way, right, to you reaching that?
Yeah, I unfortunately, probably the same thing as many other business owners, it's money, right? I mean, it's a financial need to... For growth, you're taking a lot of risk. And mm-hmm. I'm a risk taker. I'll take mm-hmm. it. That is the risk is I could have one store that doesn't make it. And thank goodness the others are making it. Well, then that's only going to even you out. So to grow, you need to find those extra dollars. Mm-hmm. So I would say financial is one of them. I think the other piece is I'm in an industry, restaurant industry is difficult because you know, baristas come and go, managers come and go. My goal is that these managers come in and they're long-term. And I have a few, I have one of them who's been with me for 7 years. She's incredible. Mm-hmm. She needs mm-hmm. to be an owner. I need to, you know, get to a point where she buys the coffee house and I get to help her mm-hmm. and watch her just, you know, flourish because of everything that she's done.
Yeah.
But that doesn't always happen because people will come in, they work as a manager and they don't like to work that long of hours or take time out of their personal life.
Running your own business is not, you know, I saw something the other day on LinkedIn, some founder posted, you know, that how he's going to have to work hard for 1 to 3 years. And I responded and I said, 1 to 3 years? In what world do you think that's all you're going to have to work hard for?
I love that.
One to three years? Did you just like fall off the turnip truck? No.
Unless, of course, you're like in the tech world where you develop something and then you sell it right away. That's it, right? You're going to make your money to sell.
Yeah. He was in tech, but I just think he was delusional to think that.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the pieces when I go into classes mm-hmm. here at the university and talk, a lot of times the students will say, I just want freedom. Well, there's a difference. I do have freedom, but mm-hmm. my freedom is that I can kind of come and go as I need, right? I don't have somebody telling me when I can come and go, but my freedom is not that I'm done every day at 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I have to work and I have to be here for my people and I take care of my people. Mm-hmm. But with that being said, if I go, my granddaughter's in Virginia, if I go to visit Nora for a week, my people are pretty good because they know that I'll take care of them. So they will take care of my place. I won't mm-hmm. get a phone call. You know, that's awesome. But I am a believer that I want to be inside the business. And I don't work behind the bar making the coffee, but I will mm-hmm. be the first one to be there cheering on, whether it's the manager to make those good choices, or if I have to go behind the till and, you know, help a customer, mm-hmm. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with cleaning the bathrooms. You have to be at that same point. Mm-hmm. So that your people will do everything that, you know, you're asking them to do.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. I mean, if anything is too good for you to do, then why are they going to want to do it? You know, it's not do as I say, not as I do.
Right. And it also teaches them how to treat their people. Cause I think, well, I was just telling you, you said it was Ben that was talking about company culture. We are very big on company culture.
Oh, Bill Benjamin. Bill. Yeah.
Yep. Bill. Mm. Yes. We do a manager meeting every month and we come mm-hmm. together and we usually talk, we spend the whole day together and we talk about a topic. And this month it's been culture. So we've been talking a lot about company culture and I mm-hmm. feel we are at a higher level than many companies We take good care of each other. Mm-hmm. It goes from, and he had said it, which I love this. He said, your culture is in your team. And it starts with your CEO building that culture.
Yes.
But then your leaders have to bring that culture into their own team. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I talk about all the time.
Good.
Our culture here at the Roastery, which is my leadership team, we have a good time. We love each other, take care of each other, but also keep each other accountable for things. And I think just that culture that we create here is shown to all the managers. Mm-hmm. But he also said that you have one toxic person in that area and it ruins it. And boy, have I seen that happen in the future.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Or not in the future. I've seen that happen in the past and you don't want that to happen. Mm-hmm.
So if you had to identify one thing, and it may be something you already said, but one thing that if solved would make the biggest impact on your business growth, what would it be?
I think, again, it's taking the risk. You know, mm-hmm. I think it is jumping and just saying, I'm going to do this. Yeah. But then that takes a lot of time. I'm a kind of a process person. I am a very big process person. And I have a lot of ADHD, so I'll say that. Also, I can jump around and I can go from mm-hmm. place to place and think about different ways of doing mm-hmm. things. But I do think there has to be a process to get to that point. And mm-hmm. to do that is time consuming because it needs to be planned out and figured out appropriately with the right finances, with the right people, with the right products, and moving forward probably with a great timeline. So, and I've been doing that slowly. A little bit of it is strategy. I do strategic planning probably every 6 months, not only for myself, but with my team. Mm-hmm. And then I have the managers do it for their stores. So I'm a believer in that strategy process planning. And I haven't done that now for probably about, 6-9 months. And it's time because things are happening in my life that needs to hit that 5-year mark mm-hmm. or even the 1-year mark of growth.
Got it. Finally, how have you evolved your workplace since, if you look at from, the start of 15 years ago to where you are now with two more businesses since then?
Well, a lot more physical space. Mm-hmm. The Roastery is a 27,000 square foot building. So we are in a very mm-hmm. large warehouse. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's grown that way. I would say that I have a lot of emotional intelligence. And that was another thing that in your past podcast talked mm-hmm. about that. I think that that's something that I've grown with and I'm a better leader because I understand not only myself, but other people and trying to create that leadership skill in other people. So that's something that has definitely changed. Again, going back to process and planning, my mm-hmm. strategies and I don't write the business plan, right? I think a business mm-hmm. plan evolves. But I do write a strategy plan and I was a professor, so I don't want to read 35 pages. Mm-hmm. Give me, 2 pages so I can read it and I can understand exactly what you want. I have gotten much better at that. So I feel like now my strategies are very clear. They're to the point. I can follow that strategy almost to a T where I can say, okay, at this point, we're going to be doing this. We're going to be doing this. And I didn't do that at the beginning. I didn't do very well at that. Mm-hmm. So that did take time.
Got it. Well, Sandy Luck, founder and owner, CEO, chief of North Dakota Coffee Roastery, Bully Brew Coffee, and Boardroom Coffee and Tap House. It was really a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. Love visiting with you.
Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace. Is there a topic you want to discuss? Let us know what you think in a review. And don't forget to click follow to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. Thanks again for listening and see you next time.